Yeah, so the question, well, I'm coming back to your question, yeah, because there are four steps, and the first one is identifying what it is that we are then subsequently going to analyse. So if we're not kind of clear about that, then it gets more complicated as opposed to easier, if you see what I mean. So I wanted to make sure that we're all kind of, yeah, I think, you know, I know where we are in all of that. So I wanted to come back to that. So is there any issue at all about, in general, the sense of self, the feeling of self, or the how we sense our self, our identity? Is that vague or difficult or simple or clear? Yeah, at any time at all. Like I'm sitting here now, yeah?
Yeah.
And when I say I,
yeah,
I'm alive, so I can feel that. Yeah, I'm sitting here, you're all sitting over there. I'm sitting on the cushion, I can feel my bum on the cushion, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For me, there's no doubt about that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's...
So far, so
I know what it's kind of referring to. So that's the sense of self. And I don't think there's any doubt at all or question as long as it's no more or less than that. That's just how it feels right now. There's any problem with it. So that's the right area, but that feeling itself, that feeling kind of, the way it appears to me is kind of, it appears as if it exists in a much more stronger way than that. Even though it's now arising because I had a thought about your question and I'm sitting here and I'm identifying with it, so it's largely a kind of it's coming up on the grounds of conceptions, but I've got thoughts, but I've got feelings about it, around it too, and I know I'm in the body and all of that. It's kind of dependent on all of that. But if that were to change in 4 or 5 minutes' time, I'd still think that there was some continuous, permanent. I have this, it's not so much, I think like that. I might sometimes, but mostly don't think about it. It's just the way it feels. You know, that Roy's in his body, you know, the body changes, the body gets older, the views change, everything else changes, but somehow Roy doesn't. But yeah, you know, it's just I can feel sad, can't I? Really unfortunate. I'm not 21 anymore. Isn't that sad? Well, you know, there wasn't an I that was here when I was 21 that's still here now. There never was. See, it's that's the one that's being targeted, as it were, to say this is the illusion that appears as if it exists in a way that it doesn't. No, exactly. It's like, you know, like the flower, when we said, because of the way the language is and everything else, we say the flower has these qualities.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you can be deceived by that sort of language into thinking, oh, there's some separate flower that has those qualities. And the qualities change, but the flower doesn't.
Yeah.
I think maybe because the additional layer is this appearance that doesn't have the existence it seems to have. Yeah, but that's the one that really doesn't have any substance. That's the one that's empty. It's actually empty of one of those, the additional layer. Yeah,
yeah.
We're the same, empty. When the sense of self, there it is, that, you know, I refer to it, it's sometimes referred to as like the mere I. And there's no problem with that. Here it is. Yeah. The problem is, where it is my sort of rather deep ingrained assumption that it's more than that. That it exists in a way that it doesn't depend on its parts. that it's kind of singular. And I don't think I have illusions of permanence, but maybe at least in the sense of all the while I'm alive, it's permanent somehow, just because there's always some sort of sense of self. Yeah, but it's a continuum rather than there being some one thing that's there all the time.
Yeah.
Kind of makes sense. Is that helpful? There was a little bit. If that's clearer, has anybody else got a thing? Yeah. Oh, are you talking about the one that thinks I'm doing all of this, but I can't actually stop my heart beating because that's governed by an autonomous nervous system? Yeah.
Mm.
And when we go to sleep, of course, all those things carry on because the autonomous nervous system carries them on for us, kindly. So, yeah, that's the one. In fact, that's. I think you articulate it very well because you said I'm the one that controls my body and all the other things that are not the autonomous nervous system, and that's exactly it. But that is that illusion of permanence that says it's always there in the centre as some kind of controller. Yeah. Now, that's not to say, if I say now, I want to raise my right arm. Yeah, I raise my right arm. I had the intent. There was an intention to raise the right arm, and the right arm goes up. That's not a problem. But the fact that all these things can happen creates an illusion that there is some one thing in there somewhere. You know, which is me that does all these things, and you know, if the arm changes or it doesn't work properly, then that's unfortunate. It's not, you know, nothing's happened to me. My arm's not well, or my arm's broken, or the nerves in the arm are a problem. See, we can use that sort of language all the time, but I'm making this distinction between an I and the arm that I own. And because that's going on all the time, this what the eye refers to then feels much more solid and as if it exists in a way that it really doesn't. It appears to be strong, solid, concrete, permanent, continuous, unchanging, not dependent on the bits. Yeah. I think you've got it. It's a good one. The idea of there being a continuous controller that's unaffected by this is the one that would be called the object of negation. Yeah. That kind of is a, it's maybe you know worth going back to the analogy of the eye sense and also consciousness itself, that there's an illusion of continuity created, yeah, that's there, in the sense that, go back to when I was talking about, didn't start in the meditation, it started in the yoga, yeah. So when I felt a cramp, and I was thinking about the cramp, well, it didn't take long to go from there to thinking, oh, maybe it's just because you're getting older, yeah? But up to that point in time, Roy's sense of his self and how Roy felt didn't feel any different to maybe how I felt when I was 21. It's only when it was challenged, or any earlier age for that matter, it's only when you challenge it that you think, oh, it's not like that anymore. Yeah. I can remember a time where people couldn't get in to get things out of a loft, and because I climbed a lot, I went up the stair rail into the loft, flipped the thing back, pulled up, put the feet on the wall, and got into the loft and got it out. But as I got into the loft, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Roy, you can't do this anymore. Like, you managed it, but I didn't even think about it. It didn't even cross my mind. But suddenly there's a dawning and it's a shock.
Yeah.
Because how it manifests to me is like nothing's changed.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Age.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a fine balance because some people, if they're well worried about all of that, then they start slowing down and stop doing things way before their time. Mm. Well, you get people like me that are likely to injure themselves before they recognise, no, that's enough. Can't do that anymore. But more important than that's fun anyway, but the important thing is the shock, the kind of, is brought about because I think I exist in a way that I don't. Yeah, in the Buddhist,
here we go back to the teaching of the Buddha.
Yeah,
it was specifically the Atman that he was saying. No, that one doesn't. See, yeah, there's another one here too. Think of continuum, a whole continuum. Mm. So, all the while I'm alive and have a sense of self, sometimes my sense of self is based on the fact that here I am talking, doing this, and I can hear my voice and all of that. And it's very kind of experiential.
Mm.
But at other times, I might think about myself. You know, who am I? Or what sort of thing am I? Or I'm a thinking subject, you know, what's that all about? Or somebody might say, what do you believe about human beings? I might say, I think, you know, we're not the physical body. We've got soul. And when the body dies, the soul leaves the body.
Mm.
Now, these, one is a kind of a, almost by innate, I mean, just there in virtue of the way we're done, the way we're made up.
Mm.
And there's another one, which is the product, it's like a conceptualized version, which, because people tell us, or we hold certain religious beliefs, or we fancy a particular psychology.
Mm.
So then when we talk in those terms, we conceptualise an idea of the self and say, it's like this.
Mm.
So there's a, what I'm saying is there's a whole continuum. So sometimes we just experience it. Sometimes we think about it and reflect on it.
Mm.
Sometimes we talk to other people. And sometimes there's one that's a view of ourselves that we kind of buy or pick up because we examine arguments and say, yeah, I like, for example, if I got sort of deeply into Advaita Vedanta and Hinduism, you know, and imagine I converted, then I would, if I converted and said, that's what I really believe, then I'd start describing myself in those terms.
Yeah.
And my conceptual idea of myself would be all cashed out in those terms.
Mm.
Yeah. But I wouldn't, it's not as if I walk around with, even if I do have strong beliefs like that, it's not as if I walk around with that one all the time.
Mm.
It kind of pops up when it's relevant, when people ask me, or if I'm thinking about it, or if I'm reading a philosophy book. And I say, no, people aren't like that at all, they're like this. Because it's coming off the basis of my profound belief that it's not that way, but this way, yeah?
Mm.
So, and there's a kind of a conceptualised sense of self there, But it's also going on all the time to a greater or lesser degree. There's hardly any time where there's no sense of self at all. And when we've been talking about the kind of traditional idea of getting you to think about or relate to a time where you were made really angry, you know, by people accusing you of doing something you didn't do, or thinking when you did something really wonderful, and either that gave you a lot of pleasure or you were very proud of it. Those are very strong senses of self. Well, at other times, it's not so strong as that.
Mm.
And then perhaps if you sit in meditation and you were sitting in like a non-conceptual meditation, not doing very much, and much like the kind of shamatha without an object, and you were sitting for a long time, then the sense of self might become very diaphanous indeed.
Very
diaphanous, hardly...
dissolved.
Yeah, very, very, very fluid, very, very thin, barely acknowledge it's there.
Mm.
If you actually settle into some sort of deepish stillness, then it's hardly there at all. I mean, there is still some construction going on, because you're not too far away from, there's still someone, what am I doing? I'm meditating. Yes, that's a construction.
Yeah.
If it went like that, then you'd neither be meditating nor not meditating, you'd just be there.
Mm.
Yeah. So, but so there's a continuum from the most thin and vaporous, diaphanous, same sort of meaning, to really, really strong ones. And the sources are physical sensations, feelings, in terms of emotions. They're all, these are both feelings, really, but one lot are sensations, the other lot are emotions. And then there's those kind of, well, I'm talking those deeper ones, that it's all rightness kind of feeling. You know, am I feeling good or am I not feeling good? Am I warming, do I feel slightly ill, or have I not got as much energy, or have I got, you know, that kind of, those kind of things. It can also arise as a result of what goes on in the mind, in this mind I'm talking about what goes on intellectually or conceptually, how I think about myself, what we were talking about here with comparing myself to other people, or might link with the feelings a bit, self-esteem, self-worth, all those sorts of things. So all of these things contribute to how I, my sense of self. But they're on a continuum, stronger and weaker, yeah? And that wherever it's, on whichever it's dependent, it's back to what the, fifth Dalai Lama, where he says sometimes it arises in respect on the body, sometimes it arises on the discrimination, sometimes on the feelings, sometimes on the conceptions or whatever. There's probably a good, there's a very good one in Rob that I looked at, and it's right back to Pali Buddha. Here's the Buddha from the Sutta Nikaya, 22-99. Just as a dog tied by a leash to a post or a stake keeps running around and circling around that very post or stake, an ordinary person, not very well versed or trained in the Dharma, regards form, the body, as self, or as self possessing the form, or form as in self, or self as in form. He regards Vedana, and this is feelings, in the sense of bodily sensations and emotions, he regards Vedana as self, or as possessing Vedana, or Vedana as in self, or self as in Vedana. He regards perception as, or he regards mental formations as, he regards consciousness as self, or self, or as possessing consciousness, or consciousness as in self, or self as in consciousness, thus keeps running around, circling that very form, the very Vedana, the very perception, very mental form. So you get the idea. Those are the kind of four bases on which cover pretty much all we've got. The sense of self. So Rob just notes after that, which is really rather good. In other words, typically and almost incessantly, we cling to varying permutations of four kinds of conception of the self, either explicitly or more immediately and intuitively through our normal ways of looking. Sometimes we may feel or conceive of the self as one or more of the aggregates. We identify with the body at times as ourselves, or we identify with the mind, or with one aspect of the mind, such as emotions or intelligence. We feel and think that is who we are. Or it is possible at times that we conceive of the self as somehow other than the aggregates, but possessing the aggregates, owning the body, owning the mind, owning the emotions, the perceptions, or other mental factors. Alternatively, we might at times believe or feel that the self is somehow in the body or in the mind. And it's possible also to conceive, feel, or believe that the aggregates are somehow in the self being thought of then as something more vast, containing the aggregates. Conceiving of the self in any of these ways is not only not conducive to liberation, but actually prevents it. The Buddha taught, therefore, that we should abandon such conceptions of the self in order to know freedom. And I think his use of the language there is important too, because The idea that it is singular, permanent, partless, existing from its own side and all that is a conception of it, not what it actually is.
Yeah.
And it's the conception that's being challenged. It's the what am I really empty of that? Completely empty of that. That's a fantasized way of going on. So it's part innate because of the way we're constructed, and partly by way of conditioning or education, and so the sense of self or the sense of identity, which is central here, is actually experienced by us. You know, we experience it, mm. But the one that's not true, if you like, is the one that's been conceptualized. We've conceptualized that, but it's gone on for so long it's become part and parcel of the picture. We believe our own propaganda.
Yeah.
Yeah. We kind of believe our own propaganda
and
about
that's
it. Yeah. Yeah. So then we take it for granted and then we don't question it and then that's how we are. That's how I am, you know. And that's the one that's sort of sensitive and likely to lead us into problems.
Yeah,
to challenge it. To challenge it. Yeah, to identify it.
Yeah.
And then there are different ways of doing this, and this particular way is a way through analysis. And it doesn't mean you just have to do one or the other exclusively. You can do them all or alternate them or whatever else. But this one through analysis, if we're not quite clear about this point, then when you try to do the analysis, it doesn't make any sense because you don't really know what you're talking about. Not in the, you know, I'm ignorant sense, but it's slipping everywhere. And then the analysis that you're using is actually, it's really quite logical, but it doesn't have any purchasing power if you can't see what it's getting at.
Yeah.
Can't relate what it's getting at to something that's actually there. Yeah, because this, I mean, what happens with this one is it invites you to say, let's imagine that the one which doesn't have, the one that we're empty of, because we're so convinced that it is that way, let's imagine that it actually does exist like that, that it really does exist like that. Okay, now we're going to try and find it. We're going to say, because if it does exist like that, then if we analyse in this way, we should be able to go, yeah, bingo. Mm-hmm. But of course, you do the analysis and there's nothing there. So you think, oh yeah, I'll get it. But if you're not sure about that, then that process doesn't happen. You just think, oh, it's a neat bit of logic that, yeah, okay, so what? You know, someone's logically analysed it and shown that there's no self. All right, but then it hasn't had any effect. Whereas if you can actually connect with what it actually is in us experientially, then it has a bit of impact when you suddenly realise, oh, there really isn't anything of that sort there. But I'm still here. Okay, so is there any more? Are we all right on that? Are we kind of clearer anyway? Clearer. Yeah, let's... try a little of the second step, seeing as we're there. So if we find a comfortable posture. So as best you can, kind of, see if you can go to the whatever sense of identity and self you have now. That kind of, it's the source of our habitual beliefs and feelings about ourselves. It's sometimes referred to as the reified I. the reified eye, the one that's grabbed on and said, yes, that's the one that exists. The one we are sent to existing in a way that it doesn't. So you can recall the words of the fifth Dalai Lama. Sometimes the eye will seem to exist in the context of the body. Sometimes it will seem to exist in the context of the mind. Sometimes it will seem to exist in the context of the feeling, discriminations, or other factors. There he's really going right back to the Pali Canon. At the end of noticing a variety of modes of appearance, you will come to identify an eye that exists in its own right, that from the start is self-established, existing undifferentiated with mind and body, which are also mixed like milk and water. This is the first step. Then he says, the ascertainment of the object to be negated, the view of selflessness. You should work at it until deep experience arises. So whatever sense you've got of this kind of reified eye, the appearance of it anyway, what we're going to do is kind of start to limit the choices about it. So we're considering the relationship between that sense of self and its causes and conditions, if you like. I mean, our sense of ourselves is kind of inextricably bound up or involved with our mental and physical aggregates. It's like everything, you know, we've just talked about four ways that give rise to the sense of self. So there, if we wanted to simplify that even further, we could say, well, that sense of self arises out of the kind of body-mind complex. It doesn't arise out there somewhere or somewhere else. It seems to be inextricably bound up with our mental and physical experience. What I, for us, refers to in our experience are largely aspects of our mind and body. And that's also, if you still want to maintain a connection with the Indo-Tibetan technical language as translated, that's why the mind and body are called the basis of designation of the self or the I. On what base do you call that I? Well, on the basis of the experiences that are happening in the mind and body. Bearing in mind that the mind and body here are not two separate things, but they're like milk and water, and they're two aspects of the same experience, as it were. So kind of any intelligent estimation of what we are has to sort of come to terms with mind and body. In particular, if the kind of the self solidly exists in the way that it appears and in the way we think it does, then it's either one with the mind and body or different from them. Kind of reflect that if we go here, we're limiting the possibilities because there are only two, logically, there are only two possibilities. You can, we'll just reflect for a moment. Are there any others? Because that's important too. If you think, oh, well, yeah, there's one of, you know, there's two possibilities. That's one way of looking at it. But it's worth saying, what others could there be? Are there, is there a third or a fourth possibility? Because if you're clear and certain about that, then you've moved from one clear step to another clear step, and there's no doubt about it. So it said, if this self that appears to exist solidly, concretely, permanently, partlessly, not dependent on anything else, kind of exists from its own side, if that one exists, then do you agree that it's either one with mind and body in some way or different from them? Could there be any other possibility? The logic would kind of say these are the only two possibilities. Could there be any other? So we need to kind of ponder those parameters. Is there a way for the I that appears to be self-established in the context of mind and body to exist other than as a part of or separate from mind and body? If the I inherently exists independent from its own side, as it seems to, can we conclude that it either must be one with or separate from mind and body? So if the I exists as we experience it, somehow independent of mind and body, inherently from its own side, it must logically then be either one with mind and body or entirely different from mind and body. Either one way or the other, no three ways about it, kind of thing. So here's a few things just to reflect and analyse about in right here and now. Sort of ask yourself whether the felt sense of I that appears to be inherently self-established in the context of our experience of mind and body could have a way of existing other than either being a part of or separate from our mind and body. If it's not either a part of or separate from mind and body, what other sort of existence could it have? And now just stop the analysis, drop it, let it go altogether, but just remain in the posture, resting in shamatha, without an object for a while.
And then think about other things or objects. Cups. There's a cup or a mug, call it what you will, cup, mug. But when I say cup or mug, there it is. So either what I'm calling cup is that or something different. Who? This is what I normally refer to when I call a cup. So either that's a cup, what I'm calling a cup is with that, one with that, or something different. Same with clocks, tables, gongs, computers, mobile phones, gong beaters, books, cushions, houses, mountains. It's kind of reflecting on the fact there's no third category. Either they're the same as what's called technically their basis of designation, but that's no more than saying either the gong is the same as this or it's something different. Either it's the same as its parts and aggregates or something different from it. So we can kind of see if we can conclude and agree that if our strong, reified sense of I exists as it seems to, as it appears to us, then it must be either one with or separate from mind and body. And then just go back and rest in shamatha on whatever experience, thoughts, feelings, bodily sensations arise right here, right now.